Chapter 2.
All right, Ma, just calm down. I will take it out.
He grabs the bag filled with garbage and makes his way to the door. He walks down the two steps when he notices a black sedan pull to a stop near the curb. He looks the street over. The car looks out of place for a street in the inner city of Toledo. Then two men emerge from the vehicle. One is wearing a military uniform, the other a campaign cover, which he had not seen since the day of basic training.
"Excuse me, does Nathan Gianni live here?" says the one wearing the stars.
"Who's asking?" "We need his services."
"Yeah? Is that so?"
The young man looks around nervously. "Who's we?"
Sergeant Kind removes his dark shades. He steps closer to the man.
"They called you the Wolf during your time in the service, didn't they?"
The man looks up to the big drill instructor.
"Sometimes. Why?"
"Because you ran away from a fight?"
"No."
"No,"
the sergeant grins.
"Because you are stealthy and always get your prey. That sound about right?"
Nathan begins to show confusion.
"What do you guys want? I was discharged 3 years ago. I served my time. Now I
take out trash?"
interjects the general.
"Let me get to the point, son. You have over 600 confirmed kills at pretty impressive distances. So what is this, an inquiry?"
"No, son," begins General Hawkins.
"We want you to come back."
"But I, there is a situation, and we are putting together the best the country has to offer. And, well, you made that list," adds the sergeant.
"Son, is everything all right?"
The young man turns to look to his front door.
"Everything is fine, Pop."
His father steps back into the house, but watches closely from the window.
"When do you guys need an answer?"
The general looks at his wristwatch.
"Now would be a good time with me. We have a lot more people to see." "Details at all?"
"Only this." The general steps closer.
"You are about to be privy to things no other American, other than your teammates, will ever know about. Then, when you're old and gray and write a book, by then it will be a great story. Just wait till I am dead first. You will know before the book."
The young man looks back and forth between the sergeant and the general.
"All right, I am in." "Good. You have 2 days to get things in order."
The men then turn and begin walking back to their vehicle. Wolf watches them.
"Where to now?"
Sergeant Kind opens a folder. "Chicago. There's a sailor there, still in the service. We just need to go pick him up. I placed a call yesterday. He is expecting us."
"All right, let's go."
Wolf stands and watches the two men walk away. He looks back to his home. The thought of letting his mother and father know of the current event has put a lump inside his throat. When he found out he was going to war, well, that was the first time he had ever seen his father cry. And now he was going again. There were so many goodbyes and so little time.
Chicago.
"You shipping out?"
The sailor grins. He likes that she asks.
"Yeah," Benny says, looking to his watch. "I have to meet my contact in a few hours."
His eyes squint when he speaks. No one would ever classify him as an overly attractive man, what with his short stature, closely cropped hair, the unusual way in which he speaks from the side of his mouth.
This, in fact, saddled him forever with the name of Popeye. But he does have a quality about him. It is a James Cagney quality, little tough guy, who takes on the big challenges that life throws at him.
Well, just so you know, I don't just let any man spend the night at my place.
Benny looks around the room. He grins for a second time. I can see why. Oh, is that humor? I don't know. You tell me. He buttons his pants as he speaks. But seriously, Marla, I hope you catch the thugs that killed your friend. She sits up from her makeshift floor bed, which was nothing more than a few blankets thrown down.
I do, too. I just wish I knew where my only lead ran off to. After I left the police station, I looked everywhere, but no one had seen him or the reporter that was with him.
Well, with a name like Fink, he was probably lying all along.
Yeah, maybe, but I still have to find him. He was a part of it somehow.
Well, beautiful, I hope I can see you again sometime. He leans over to get a kiss.
Well, maybe, if you get a leave of absence.
She kissed him.
Yeah, I am sure I will, one day.
So long, sailor, she says, as she watches him close the door behind to her apartment. He moves down the stairs and out of the apartment building. Hey, you runt! He turns to see a big man high-stepping toward him.
Hey, you're the mug from the other night. The bar, right?
Says Popeye.
Yeah, you made me look bad in front of Marla.
Oh, hey, sorry about that. The big man swings a heavy-handed right cross. The much smaller man ducks low and comes up swinging his own right hand. It connects to the large bearded chin of the attacker. The man staggers backwards and lands near a parked car.
Sorry, pal, but I need to catch my ride,
Popeye says as he runs off. Las Vegas, Nevada.
Look, partner, I believe in luck as much as the next person, but come on. 3 aces 4 times in a row?
The two men in the expensive suits leaned back in their chairs simultaneously. The one in which the comment was directed eyes him hard.
Why, Bill, partner, where the freak are you from? No one says that outside of the pictures.
Bill returns the gaze. He looks to the one on the left, then the right. He sits, cards in hand, his long, lean legs crossed, one pointed toe boot over the other. His black trousers stretch up to his black shirt, which is neatly tucked inside his black belt. He grins a crooked grin, his thin black mustache running along the top of his lip.
Well, where I am from, it's a sign of friendship.
The gangster leans forward now.
Are we friends, Bill? Well,
Bill pauses a minute. He looks to the other gangster sitting to his left.
Since I don't have many friends, Bill lays his cards face down onto the table, and the ones I do have don't cheat at cards.
You stinking cowboy, the man says as he leaps to his feet, nearly knocking over the card table.
Hey, take it, Marky, says the other suited man. Are you kidding, Tommy? This mook just called me a cheat.
Hey, now no need of name-calling, Bill says. Then he looks at Tommy.
Say, what's a mook?
Well, it's kind of like calling you a stupid person. Bill looks up to Marky.
You calling me stupid, Marky? You know what I think, do you? I think
I will have some of my boys take you out and teach you some manners." Before Marky could put his lips together and whistle, the table is being overturned, knocking Marky and Tommy both backwards. Bill suddenly rises to his feet, holding 2 6-guns, one in each hand, and pointing outward at the 2 men.
"Now, you boys, just stay right where you're at, and my 2 friends here, the ones that don't cheat, will not lay you out."
"I ain't forgetting this, Bill," Marky says, pointing a finger.
"Good, 'cause neither will I."
Bill then slowly begins to walk backwards to the exit. He then holsters his left 6-shooter and reaches around and grabs the doorknob and pulls it open. Bill quickly strolls out of the apartment building. Then a black sedan catches his eye across the street. He adjusts his black hat with the kettle curl and pecan crown.
"Wild Bill!"
He turns to see the 2 men walking toward him.
"Who wants to know?"
"General Hawkins and Sergeant Kind. We are with the United States government," the general says.
"Well, that is never a good opener. What's this about? I paid my taxes."
"Not about that." The 2 men pause near Bill. "We have an issue, and we need your services."
"That's so."
"Yes, it's our understanding you're one of the best pilots in the Army Air Corps." Bill pushes his hat back to where he could look at the 2 men better.
"Well, there has been a mistake."
"Oh?" adds Sergeant Kind.
"Yeah, I am the best. I can fly anything, but I ain't wearing no more uniforms. I am done with that."
"Fair enough," the general says. Bill looks from Kind to Hawkins.
"What are you needing me to do?"
"We are putting together a unit, one that has to remain top secret."
"Top secret, huh? That never ends well for anyone."
"So are you in or not?" asks the general.
"Strictly volunteer," interjects Kind.
"Well, I got no better option, but I just don't want no bureaucratic bull. If we go on a mission, let us do our jobs and..."
"Let me stop you, Wild Bill. I am in charge of this operation. I have fought on the battlefield, and we are going to fight a different kind of war. And if I give the order, you are to carry it out to the letter."
"All right, General, then let's do this," he says, sticking out a hand.
Sergeant Kind looks past Wild Bill.
"Good. Now you need help with your new friends?"
Bill turns. He watches as 3 gangsters begin making their way to where the trio is standing.
"No, you go on ahead. I got this one."
Wichita, Kansas. "Allie, your eggs are done." He sits the plate on the tabletop. She walks into the kitchen, wearing a long white shirt, barefooted, and hair's a mess.
"Clint, how on earth can you be so chipper so early in the morning?"
He grins. His strong, square, clean-shaven jaw is set like stone, his dark hair closely cut but combed neatly. His dark eyes gleam at her. His strong chest and arms stretch his white T-shirt to its limits. "You know why."
"Hey, I was in there also. But it doesn't mean I like to jump out of bed before the rooster crows,"
she says as she lifts her fork. He smiles again. Her eyes break to the right.
"You really have to wear that silly thing?"
He follows her gaze. "Oh, the beret. They say it's a symbol now. Brand new idea. You know the elite."
"No arrogance there."
She lifts a piece of egg to her mouth. The knock to the door causes both to pause their conversation.
"Pretty early for visitors," she says.
"Yeah, I know." He walks across the kitchen and through the sitting room to the front door. He pulls it open.
"Can I help you?"
"Warrant Officer Clint Fremont?"
"Yes."
"I am General Hawkins, and this is..." Before he could finish, Clint was already standing in a salute. "At ease, soldier. This is Sergeant Kind. May we speak with you and your wife?"
"Yes, sir.
Please come in," Clint says as he steps aside. "Allie, we have company. Would you care for some coffee or something?" In a few minutes, Allie steps into the room wearing a long robe. "We are sorry to interrupt so early, just a little pressed for time. I will get right to the point. We are putting together a unit, a top-secret unit, mostly looking for possible escaped Nazi commanders, and we need the best the military has to offer. And, well, your name came up." Then the general looks to Allison. "As did yours. Clint Fremont, we understand you were assigned to Colonel Aaron Bank."
"Yes, sir.
He just formed a unit, and, well, I was placed within its ranks. They nicknamed it the Green Beret. Well, soldier, we want to offer you a raise in rank, and you will answer to no one but the two of us."
"And what did you need to talk to me about?" asks Allie.
General Hawkins then turns his attention to her. "You were working counterintelligence toward the end of the war. Is that correct?"
"Yes, sir, but my time was up and I left."
"Well, we could use your expertise again." "She won't be in the fight, will she?" interjected Clint. "Hopefully the fight will be fought with papers and pens this time. I need her mind. She will most likely help me locate the criminals. She will be working with me from the Pentagon, or the new headquarters that is being built as we speak."
"Will I be paid?"
"Of course, ma'am," adds Sergeant Kind. Allie looks at Clint.
"What do you think?" she asks.
"Well, it beats rattling around on this farm." "Good to hear." The general hands the couple a card. "Here is the address. Show up here in 2 days.
"Yes, sir,"
Clint says, followed by a salute. Allie looks to her husband.
"Are we really back in?"
she asks. "Well..." Clint steps to the door. He watches Kind and Hawkins make their way to their automobile. "Looks like you and I was already in, but this, well, this is something different altogether." "Mark has found the other one," the general says, stopping short of the driver's side door.
"Where is this one located?" asks Kind.
"Georgia. We had better hurry. We need to get things in order before everyone is assembled." An undisclosed location. He adjusts his new uniform in the mirror. He looks past his reflection at the two men standing behind him. Both men are in gray uniforms, with a hint of black lining their lapels. Their shoulders are adorned with patches, showing a snake encircling the earth. The door opens, and in walks a tall, dark-headed woman, codenamed Python. In reality, she is the daughter of a wealthy business owner who had recently passed away, leaving his only daughter with the entire fortune.
"Mein Führer, Kingsnake, your subjects have assembled in the hall. The new recruits are there as well," she says as she stops near her leader. He turns to face her.
"You must wear the hood. We cannot risk anyone knowing who you are."
He looks to the small table near his dressing mirror, On the table lays a gray hood with two eye holes cut out in it.
"How is the steroids coming along?"
He lifts the hood. She grins. "Dr. Clive says that he will be ready for testing so very soon."
"I wanted the U.S. president dead. Why is he still alive?"
He slides in over his head.
"I know. We should have taken him first, before the speaker and the others. Do not let this trouble you. We are growing daily, and soon we will be the number one power in the world."
She paused, as if reflecting. "Again," she adds.
"At this point, I would settle for all of mine enemies to be trampled into dust."
"Yes, I know, and I assure you it will happen in time. Now come, your public awaits." He turns to face the mirror. His reflection shows a mincing figure with a concealed face.
"I want every soldier's face to be hidden. No one will be able to link anyone to us. I want no identities known. We will be the most feared organization in the world. We will control the world by fear. That is how people are controlled. They will do anything you tell them if they fear you," he says.
"Sir and madam?" Both turn to face the guard standing by the open door.
"What is it, soldier?"
she asks. "It's Zorawar. He is reporting in." The man, codenamed Kingsnake, because of his supreme leadership, peers intently through the mask.
"Why is he not reporting to the twins?"
"The message is urgent." Kingsnake looks to the woman, codenamed Python.
"Take the call."
She quickly turns and walks from the room. In only a minute, she is near the phone. She lifts the receiver.
"Yes?"
She nearly purrs into it.
"They are forming a team, a unit, you say?"
"Oh, and just to track us?"
"Very well. I want you on that unit. Use any means necessary. I want you a part of it, and I want to know every move they make. I do not care how you get there. Just do it. That is your job."
"No? You are our deep cover man, so go deep."
"Good. Very well."
She places the receiver back onto its cradle. She makes her way back to her leader.
"They are forming a unit to track us," she says.
"Of course they are."
"And, sir," Kingsnake pauses before exiting the room.
"Is there more, soldier?"
"Just that Baron Khrushchev is here." The Baron is of Russian nobility, who has for generations made his fortune from trading and dealing in arms. His only loyalty is to himself. He manufactures the most dangerous weapons on earth, and is sought after by many governments, which is why he wears an iron mask that conceals his face. It is a mask without expression, no joints, just two squares for his eyes, and a slit for a mouth. The only time it is removed is to sleep and eat, in which he, without the company of others, no one alive today has ever looked upon his true face, and those poor unfortunate one that have are long dead. They died in horrible ways. He is a powerfully built, intimidating figure. He stands near 6'8" tall. He dresses mostly in black clothing. His pants are tucked into his knee-high boots.
to which he always keeps a knife inside the right one. His shirts are all made of silk and hand-stitched. They flow as he moves about like ripples on water. He, at times of formalities, wears a long flowing red cape that hangs from the right side of his shoulder.
Good. I need to discuss something with him after the ceremony. Python, have the twins tighten down businesses. No unnecessary attention until we are completely ready.
Yes, my king.
She turns and is gone once again. Kingsnake turns back to face his guard.
All right, let us greet my army. Oh, and the new batch of children?
They have arrived and settled. But, sir, we need to wait a few more years. This last reaping has caused questions. And, sir, well, children that go missing, well, that brings attention, especially when it takes place all over the globe. One or two go relatively unnoticed, but 100.
Then reduce the numbers and get the older ones ready for trials.
Yes, sir.
The king snake turns to face two large doors that begin to part in the center to reveal a balcony. He steps out. He looks across the buildings to the ocean. Underneath the hood, he smiles. He looks down to the mass of soldiers that stand in perfect formation. He peers through the mask.
My people!
The crowd cheers thunderously.
We have taken the symbol of the snake because we have moved into every facet of society. We have slithered undetected into governments, into communities, into workplaces, and we have become as ordinary citizens with friends and families. And soon it will be time to make ourselves known. No longer will we remain oppressed by the outside world?
Again, the crowd cheers.
Our numbers grow daily. People are tired of being controlled by their governments, local and national. It is time we step up and reclaim human rights. It is nearing time for us to strike, and strike we will. No longer will the snake sit idle. No longer will we retreat into the grass. We are venomous. We have fangs. And soon we will strike. And once we do, no country on earth will be safe from our coils.
The crowd erupts in applause. Georgia. You, Wilson Thomas? The large black man stands from leaning underneath the hood of a car.
That's right. Who's asking?
Sergeant Kind and General Hawkins, the general says as they approach.
You a drill sergeant?
The big man says, nodding his head toward the sergeant.
Was.
Why you still wear the hat?
Reminds me of what I am.
Well, I hated my drill sergeant.
Then he must have done his job.
What do you want here?
The sergeant and general take a minute to look around the garage. Then, is this what you want to do with the rest of your life?
Willie, as he is known by friends, looks around his surroundings. Not really.
What do you want to do? Presses the general.
Seriously?
Of course.
The general steps closer. If you could do anything, what would it be?
Ha ha ha! A comedian!
The general's eyes widened. You're built like a tank, and this is what you would want to be? Can I ask why?
I like comedy.
Well, I like ham sandwiches, but I don't want to be a pig.
Yeah, well, that's you, and this is me.
I want to be on the radio, make people laugh, you know, like Rochester.
But he is not the star Jack Benny is. That's what you think. Listen to it. Rochester gets the laughs.
All right, enough of talk. Listen up. The sergeant, now frustrated by the conversation, intervenes.
We are building a unit, and we understand you are good with heavy weapons.
The man, looking disgruntled at the interruption, growls. Look at these arms. What do you think?
We would like for you to join our team.
Team?
Yes, a top secret unit. Going after escaped Nazis, adds the general.
You know what? The big man steps in front of the sergeant.
I will consider it. If this man here can put me down, all you drill sergeants speak a tough game, but have very little play.
That won't be necessary. Come on, sergeant, says the general. The sergeant stands, staring at the big man.
Well, says Thomas, you game?
All right, funny man. If you do it, you join. No questions asked.
The black man grins.
All right, done.
The sergeant removes his cover and hands it to the general. Sergeant Kind, we really don't have the time for...
This won't take long.
Oh, and cocky, too.
Thomas turns his body as if he is going to walk away, but then swings hard right toward Sergeant Kine's face. Kine sidesteps, causing the man to fumble forward. Sergeant Kine then lands a heavy blow to the cheekbones of Thomas. His head snaps to the side, spinning his torso. The sergeant lands another blow to the chin, and Thomas goes to the ground.
For a minute he lays there, and then Thomas rolls onto his back.
You... leading this unit?
I am, replies the drill instructor. Then I am in.
Sergeant Kine throws out a hand, and the man takes it. He is then helped to his feet. Kine looks to the general.
Give him the card.